If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Because we're just getting started.
And you can see Scott Butzke really put together.
Waiting for my man.
And here we are, Rewind Away number 193. The Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm edition of the show.
And you and your numbers, you're fantastic.
I try.
Very, very good.
Yes. Yeah. Here we are, Way. A special edition of Rewind Away. We are not reviewing a specific event, but instead our Espresso executive producer, Kishan, has chosen a special compilation of retirement matches in pro wrestling history. We have put together a list of five matches, a very digestible number for everyone to check out, and generally pretty accessible matches. And yeah, we're going to talk about several of these retirement matches and what makes a retirement match succeed. And we'll probably along the way talk about some failures that pro wrestling is littered with along its pathway.
Yeah, I always enjoy these compilation types of shows because, I mean, there's certainly value in like just talking about a card as a whole, especially because, like, you know, when we talk about just like a full show, there are often like hidden gems that are, for better or worse, like well remembered, sometimes for the worst of reasons that, you know, you don't necessarily get when you're talking about like a mixtape sort of thing. But on certain occasions and for certain themes, I really like taking a break just to kind of talk about like the best of certain things. And again, as I mentioned on a previous podcast, this is not a list. This is not a ranking of like
the greatest. No, this is definitive, okay? This is going in the Smithsonian, the top retirement matches in history, as dictated by John Pollock and Wei Ting.
If anything, this is just maybe some of the retirement matches that might come, you know, to the top of mind for at least the three people that are involved with this podcast, that being John, myself, and Kishan, who are who chose at least suggested three of the matches that we're about to talk about. And those are Ric Flair's retirement, Shawn Michaels' retirement, and Sting's retirement. And that left two other matches for John and I each to select one of. And the first match that we will be talking about is your selection, John.
That's right. So this is going to span from 1983 up until this past April. So a wide range of 42 years worth of retirement matches. And Wei, we will have some books to lean on to get some perspectives on some Amazing. Of these retirements as well. So look forward to that. But yes, we are starting on August the 31st of 1983. How old were you on August 31st, 1983, Wei?
I was negative 10 months old.
Yes, we didn't make it for Terry Funk's first retirement, which he will put a bit of an asterisk next to in his defense when we get to our first book excerpt a little later on. But it is Terry and Dory Funk Jr. against Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy. Now, let's put aside the fact that the younger brother is the one who is retiring here. Dory is like, well, hey, old Terry, I'm still going strong. Dory will get into a ring today as we speak. Of course, Terry Funk passing away 2 years ago. And my first question that I'm just going to get out of the way, this is a totally isolated conversation between me and Wei, but were there any flashes during this match that you're watching Dory Funk Jr. in 1983 and thinking of Ed Nordholm?
No, I can confidently say no.
former NWA champion? No.
Ed Nordholm.
When the lighting is a certain way and he's at a certain angle toward the camera, I think you'll see it.
Okay. I would say Dory Funkin is maybe younger days.
We're talking about 1983 here.
Well, I didn't get a great look at what Dory Funk's face looked like, but I mean, we're talking about a bald white man, and
it's in this match where he's got the blonde like a horseshoe going on. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's sure. Yeah, the first time I ever, I don't think that'll ever be mentioned in any review of this.
I was watching this at probably 2 a.m. as well, so that might have contributed to my observation. But just wanted to ask you a little bit about this. So, let's set the stage here. Okay, so from Terry Funk's book that came out in 2005, and we go to chapter 17, and the chapter is appropriately labeled "My First Retirement Match." You always remember your first way. I'm not going to do Terry's voice. I announced my retirement in Japan in 1981, 2 years in advance of my planned 1983 retirement show. It was around the same time as the Abdullah the Butcher angle with the fork to the arm, and was born out of the same of necessity to compete with Antonio Inoki and thus New Japan. I wanted All Japan to have something that the fans could follow along for a long period of time, and my idea was to announce my retirement that far in advance and then build to it slowly. I discussed the idea with Baba and Dory, but it was my choice and my idea. It was my idea to have it for 2 years. I thought we'd have something built up by then, and at that point, All Japan would have some other things with momentum to carry the company. Things kept on peaking, and the company was really rolling by the time we did my retirement match. The match was me and Junior against Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy. If I hadn't done what I did when I did it, I truly believe Inoki would have eaten All Japan, and the company would not have existed any longer. New Japan was leaps and bounds ahead of us at the time in 1981. My retirement was an enabler. It enabled All Japan to have some long-term programs to build to the future while it was going on. I'm not just patting myself on the back when I say that I unselfishly gave that company 3 years to get back on track and then willingly gave up my position as one of its top attractions. The night of the show, I had a tough time. It was very emotional because I truly had no intention of ever going back to Japan. Baba certainly never said anything that night or in any of the nights leading up to it to make me think there was a plan to bring me back. I had gotten close to a lot of the wrestlers there. The point of the match was almost as much to show Gordy in a new light with more of a main event feel as it was to spotlight my retirement. I think the match really did a lot for Terry. He was a hell of a worker and had unbelievable natural talent. After that retirement, I was done. That was it. I got paid a meager amount as a booker, but I had no involvement with the company, and they had programs going so strong that things just kept on rolling for the next 15 months. Now, we must be clear. I said I was retiring in Japan. I never did say I would never wrestle again, and it was never my intention to stop wrestling everywhere. I didn't lead Baba, the fans, or the press to think that was what I meant. I had worked a handful of matches by early 85 in the US, but I really did stay out of the ring for almost that first year after my retirement match. But in 1984, Baba asked me to come back and referee a match in February, and then he would eventually come back later in the year in 1984 and acknowledges the fact that he was never as popular as before the first retirement. Like, this was considered a really big event in Japan. And when he came back, I mean, there was fans that saw him as, you know, lied to them as such. But hey, I only said I'm retiring in Japan, which way has John Cena ever said, I'm just retiring in Washington? I mean, that is a way out for all of these wrestlers. I never said everywhere.
Yeah. He's not retiring from Saudi Arabia. He's not retiring from, you know, the rest of the world. I hadn't heard Terry's initial retirement to be able to confirm it, but like, I'm almost positive if people got the impression that he meant like a final retirement internationally, he wasn't going to correct them necessarily. So okay, fine.
So we go to this match. So it's been built up for 2 years, give or take, at this point, and it's taking place at the Kurame Kokugiken, which was opened in 1954 by the Japan Sumo Association. This was kind of an in-between building between versions of Sumo Hall, between the old version and the one that we see today, and was this building actually shut down in 84, so it's only around for another year. And if you want to hear more about this, WH does a lot of the history of this on the 38th edition of Long and Winding Royal Road with Braden Harrington, the Terry Gordy to WH's Terry Funk. And beforehand,
and we might actually link a lot of the supplementary material that we'll be talking about in the show notes as well.
This crowd is it's listed at 13,600. It aired on NTV, which was the broadcaster for All Japan Pro Wrestling here in the heyday of the mid 80s. And I mean, this crowd, it sounded like they were in the middle of a stadium. Like, it was so loud. There's nothing on this compilation that we're going to talk about that approaches the level of heat that this has before they even lock up. Like, just the celebration beforehand, the streamers, there is, you know, all these figures surrounding the ring. Just an incredible scene that we're watching here.
I agree. And that covers a lot of ground. We're talking about WrestleManias here, you know, that this crowd sounded louder than. We're talking about like Sting Darby, which this crowd, I would say, sounded louder than. And I don't know if that's just like the way audio might have been captured somehow through like aged VHS or something, or just the acoustics.
Maybe they were just more emotional.
Yeah, but
I don't think this was a technical glitch.
Well, no, not at all. But like, I find it hard to believe that, like, you know, like,
dude, there were women here dressed as Terry's cheerleaders. Okay, yeah. There was no one dressed as Ric Flair's cheerleaders in 2008.
Like, is it just such a universal thing where like wrestling reactions from the past could sound like this? Because you don't really get this sort of vibe anymore. You get it with like a world class tape. You get it with like, you know, like maybe other examples like this. But like, man, this just sounded like a very different level from like even what we would consider to be really hot crowds today.
Well, it is so heated when the match begins. And so also the backstory here, like Stan Hansen is basically a protege of Terry Funk. Like, he is his gateway into professional wrestling. So you have that dynamic here between Terry and Stan Hansen. And then Terry Gordy is like, again, he's 22 at this time. This is a very big high profile match for him. And as Terry outlined here, like, this match was a big, like, the story is Terry's retirement, but it's also putting Terry Gordy at this higher echelon, just being in the ring with these other three. And of course, Stan makes the jump from New Japan over to All Japan at the Real World Tag League. So he was a big pickup by All Japan and becomes one of the most famous foreigners in All Japan's history, in Japanese history. So we start off and Hansen and Gordy are working over Dory, and you just hear the crowd, "Tally, Tally," and they're all chanting for Terry. And even when he's just on the apron, like, they are just like in love with Terry Funk. And Hansen would execute a pile driver, and then Terry is leaping over the top rope just to break the cover, as there's so much intensity here. And when the tag is made, Terry is in with Hansen, and he is rifling off left hands at Stan. And Terry comes into this with a bandage above his eye, which instantly gets opened up. So we got the blood flowing here. Hansen is biting the wound, and then Hansen starts stomping the knee and keeps Terry in their corner. Gordy goes after the knee and then tries for Terry's patented spinning toe hold. And then Terry avoids, tags his brother, and in comes Dory with drop kicks. Hansen and Dory go to the floor, and then Gordy comes off the top, misses Terry, and we see Terry Funk go to the top and says, "You know what? I could have a whole second career coming off the top rope. I wonder if I could flip backwards one day." And off he comes with a sunset flip, catching Terry Gordy. And to encapsulate the heat here, let's just listen to this finish.
Amazing.
That was game five, Jays Dodgers. And then
yes. With the baby face coming out on top.
Yes. Unbelievable reaction here. Like, this is not a long match. It's only listed at 12 minutes, 35 seconds. But just super heat. I thought this was one of those occasions where I didn't even feel like this was, you know, that you needed a whole lot more than this. It was just like nonstop action for the 12 and a half minutes, and they crammed a lot into it. They got blood in this match. It didn't feel gratuitous, but I mean, the story of this match is just the unbelievable emotion for the from start to finish, pre-match ceremony, post-match ceremony, and in between, you try to get like the shine on Terry Gordy as well, and a pretty spectacular finish for the time of a sunset flip off the top by Terry.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things that you'll notice about all of these matches is just the emphasis on emotion and just, you know, outcome is certainly important, but more important is the fact that you are coming into this with the understanding that you're about to watch this person's last day on the job, and that just heightens everything, right? And you know, to be fair, we're talking about retirement matches that are like billed as such ahead of time, or at least like gives you the impression that like, hey, this could possibly be a career ending match for this person. Not necessarily that like the matches where, you know, they wrestle and then the next day they retire because of like unforeseen circumstances, for instance. I think there's an art in promoting something being the last time you'll get to see somebody. And I thought this was certainly like a very early and very, very strong example. The atmosphere in this match is just outstanding. Top tier from beginning to end. It is the type of crowd reaction that, like, I would even say in many ways exceeds the types of crowd reactions we get 40 years later. And only at 12 minutes, they managed to achieve like a level of drama that I think exceeds a lot of matches that go 30 plus. I certainly didn't feel shortchanged at all. And I think that a large part of it is because they started this thing really hot. Like from the moment the streamers touched down, the heels are attacking the baby faces, and the intensity is just like, it's this chaotic, like brawling type of like style that I think the, you know, these men have sort of like made their legacies off of. I thought Terry from the beginning did such a great job from fighting underneath. He's got such like an erratic, like chaotic energy about him, which, you know, obviously works as a villain, but like here, I think is very well utilized as a sympathetic babyface. When you're watching him sell, when you're watching him fight from, you know, the bottom, he's got this ability to look like very unbalanced. And it gives you this feeling like he's almost walking on a tightrope the whole time. And it just makes you want to see him regain his footing so that he can conquer his goal. This crowd was responsive to every sensation Funk was feeling in his body. And I thought Gordy and Hansen were incredible at sort of like playing these two monsters, bringing in that intensity, bringing in that just like pressure, you know, to force this Terry Funk to kind of overcome. So I thought their performance was just as important as both of the Funks to this match's success. And I imagine quite spectacular to see somebody like Gordy Size flying off the top rope, missing that splash at this time.
Yeah, there is something to be said for the lost art of like your 10 to 12 minute classic that you can absolutely have under the right circumstances. That can be an all-time memorable match that length does not always parallel with greatness. It's like it is all in what you do with that time. And I mean, granted, you had exceptional circumstances here that created the atmosphere for this match, but maybe the most memorable part of this entire presentation, as documented in Beyond the Mat, which was probably most people's first window into the footage of this retirement, Terry Funk addresses his Japanese audience.
Japan!
Like, that's insane. It's insane.
Iconic.
Any chance that the guy also just had a brain freeze and just didn't know what to say, so he just ran with forever?
Maybe his mic wasn't working. And
it like, wasn't really... at the beginning. If you listened, I actually had to edit the first part of this out because the mic is not picking him up at all. It's barely audible. Yeah. And then it gets fully functional. But this becomes, like, one of the most, like, I would say, famous not even a promo, like speech in a pro wrestling setting. And like, it's the forever mantra that has been like capitalized so well, whether in comedic light with the forever clotheslines or just, but really, I think Beyond the Mat really makes this such a famous promo. Cause I like, that was the first time I ever saw this promo was when I saw Beyond the Mat in a movie theater.
It's a promo by the loosest of definitions. It's a promo that makes you maybe reconsider, well, what exactly is a promo? How many words does a promo need to have as a minimum in order to be considered one? I also wonder if, like, you know, how much of the limitation of, you know, his ability to speak the Japanese language, certainly, and also to, like, want to simplify his words for this Japanese audience, how much of that played into, like, this decision? Because it's such an unusual decision for somebody to speak like this at any in any circumstance, but in particular, somebody's goodbye to a crowd. You know, to simply like essentially start a chant and not even one that he's expecting the crowd to like repeat. It's a chant that he's conducting by himself in the most emotional of ways. And it's one that you can't just listen to, but you have to see because it's his face is full of blood. It's full of sweat and just pure emotion, you know, in the way that he's able to speak. Yeah, when he passed away, I mean, you know, you among many other people like kind of brought this clip back up as like one of the defining visuals of his career and defining moments of his career that seemed very sort of, I guess, apropos, you know, of the feelings you want to attach to somebody upon their passing. And it was just, it was beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, as much as it's like a punchline for people about the Terry Funk retirement, like to me, it is a career that is among the greatest, I think, of all time. When he passed away, I honestly, like, that was maybe one of my most favorite stories to ever write was on Terry Funk. I don't know if I've even shared this, but it was, like, several months later, his daughter found my story on Terry Funk and actually messaged me about it, which was very cool to hear as well. But, you know, he comes back the next year in the Real World Tag League with his brother. And listen to this lineup of teams for the Real World Tag League. Jinichiro Tenryu and Jumbo Tsuruta, Brody and Hanson, the Funks, Nick Bockwinkel and Harley Race, the British Bulldogs, Baba and Rusher Kimura, One Man Gang and Goro Tsurumi. One of these is not like the other. And Tiger Jeet Singh with Mike Shaw as well. So, I mean, Bastion Booger also part of this this Real World Tag League.
Yeah. Speaking of just like maybe luminaries, I'm pretty sure I saw like a very young Toshiaki Kawada and Mitsuharu Misawa as ring pulls.
Misawa's in like his second year and Kawada's in his rookie year at this time. So,
did Misawa take that lariat from Hanson at the end? Was that him?
Oh, yeah, because Hanson storms the ring and takes out a bunch of the young boys. I'm sure Kawada was one of them.
Yeah. Anyway, they were ringside.
Or Misawa.
So just imagine, like, you know, the ringside seat that those two had to this incredible moment.
Yeah.
Among others, of course.
I love this era of wrestling. And one thing about All Japan that it has such a leg up on New Japan is just like every match of consequence of All Japan is basically on YouTube. Like, it's so easily accessible. And New Japan, it's the total opposite. Like, you know, they have a very big library on New Japan World, but like this All Japan stuff, it's so easily accessible. Like a match like this, for instance.
NTV isn't coming to deliver copyright strikes.
NTV is, I don't think they've heard about YouTube yet, so okay. Let's hope that sticks around. But awesome match, awesome ceremony, and the best Terry Funk retirement of all of them, I think.
So in total, like, do you have a count of how many actual retirements this man actually had?
So he, like, it's only like a year away that he goes to the WWF. Like, it's crazy. Like, here he is on NTV retiring, and within 2 years, he's in like one of the most watched matches ever with Hulk Hogan on Saturday Night's Main Event on NBC. He retires again in 89 after the Flair program, after the I Quit match, to become a broadcaster. Then he comes back. He retires in 97. He does, again, featured in Beyond the Mat, the match with Brett with in Amarillo, the farewell. I'm trying to think. I'm thinking of ones where, like, he privately might have said that was it, but not a build retirement. There's a few others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but there were a lot. And maybe some of this will come up later because I have also designed a bonus game for Waiting to Play.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Look out.
Okay.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So we are now going to fast forward by a significant portion. We're going from 1983 all the way up to 2008. And for this one, we are going to the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida, March the 30th, 2008, WrestleMania 24. It is the career-threatening match between Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
A promotion that has never, maybe this is what an athlete should go through, like a basketball player that says, the next game I lose, I will retire.
How would the contracts work in that with that stipulation?
You get paid until you lose. You get a per game amount.
Okay.
Like, tell me that wouldn't be, you get out to like a 5-game winning streak, you would be selling tickets by the boatload. Like, when's this guy going to lose?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or he could lose the very first game of the season and that's it.
Yeah. That would suck. But this was, I think a wonderful template of a modern retirement run that I think is very well remembered.
Yeah. What did you feel at the time about this so they had set this up in November, where this was a Steve Austin idea. He pitched the idea of Flair doing this retirement and the career-threatening aspect to it. And it was somewhat massaged. They came up with this idea. And so Vince McMahon comes out and lays this out in November, that the next time you lose, you will retire. So they run this basically around Survivor Series time in November through WrestleMania. And he goes through MVP at the Royal Rumble, Kennedy at No Way Out in February. He does a big match in the Carolinas with Triple H on an episode of Raw. Honestly, like, the lead up to this was not really all that great. Like, for Ric Flair's final run that everyone was viewing this as, this really took up, like, what people remember is this incredible go-home segment that these two have, the old Yeller promo, where he slaps Shawn and knocks that goofy cowboy hat off his head, and it was an awesome, awesome segment to make this feel like a big, big match for Mania, and with, I would say, like, 95% of your audience knowing this was going to be the end for Flair. Like, you had the arguments, man, he could win this, and you could milk another match where he goes for the title and then loses. But I think everyone knew you're tuning into WrestleMania and you are going to see Flair finally lose here. So they went with Shawn. And I think in hindsight, I was not negative on this being the direction that they went using Shawn. And I think in hindsight, I don't think anyone was critical of the choice to go with Shawn here rather than had this been somebody else on the roster and the idea of, like, making a guy.
Yeah. Well, who are some of those names to your recollection?
Maybe they could have picked Terry Gordy's son. Ray Gordy, who was Jesse at this point.
No? I guess unlikely at the time.
Probably,
I
mean, unlikely.
The fact that the setting is WrestleMania.
MVP and Kennedy were, like, those were considered two of your emerging prospects at the time. But I don't think they would have worked in this setting. And I don't think that they, like, there's another issue that there was not that obvious candidate in 2008 of, like, our future star. Like, they were so wrapped up in Cena and Orton and Batista. And, like, they... this was not a period where they were, you know, fostering their next generation of stars in any significant way. That I, like, Kennedy and MVP were two of your candidates, and like what, a CM Punk? Like, it was just, it was such a hard fit to imagine someone in this, and it not being just, it would have almost like been a negative to that person to end Flair's career and ending it on that note versus someone of that's already a made guy in Shawn Michaels.
Well, if Flair wasn't somebody who I think, I don't know, carried such reverence attached to his name, and if this was a company that, like, by this point, I you know, didn't care so much for him, I feel like they might have gone the route of, like, wanting to, you know, predominantly use this to pass value onto somebody. But he was, I think, very beloved by everybody, and his is a career that is... well, really legendary, right? And I'm sure it would have offended a lot of people back there if you kind of really just more so extracted value out of it rather than maybe give it this, like, wonderfully grand sort of, like, parting. And so the I'm sure, you know, much of the decision making went into just trying to see how we can make this as big as possible and how can we provide the greatest match possible for this person's legendary career. And I don't know if you could make a better choice than Shawn Michaels.
So the night before, Flair is inducted into the Hall of Fame by Paul Levesque. And of course, we got Leave the Memories Alone by Fuel, a very 2008 song. And the video package here, it features highlights of the old Yeller promo that I just thought was fantastic. And Ric Flair's final interview before the retirement match is conducted by Mike Adamly. And he is asked, "What is your game plan, Ric?" His game plan is to be the man.
Yeah.
Unparalleled access to this man's inner psyche moments before this match. The family is there in the front row, if ever there was a tell of what was in store. We have his then-wife, Tiffany, with a young Ashley Fleer, Reed, David, and Megan. All the children are there in the front row. And we have Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler on commentary with Charles Robinson, Lil Nate himself, as the referee.
Wonderful that he got to do this one.
Yes, I'm sure he thought, man, he's never going to wrestle again. So we start off, and early on, it's like hammerlock exchanges, and then Flair just shoves him and yells, "Old Yeller, huh?" And Michaels slaps Flair and busts open his lip. So we had...
To listen to the rest of this podcast, consider becoming a member at postwrestlingcafe.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.